Hi everyone, today is Wednesday, May the 11th, 2020, and you're listening to another episode of Listen to L Boogie. Today we're going to cover House passes $40 billion Ukraine aid bill and more. See you guys after this short break. Peace. Hello everyone, you're back on We'll Listen to L Boogie. We're going to cover our first piece of news. Other bits of news to be determined during this episode, but we're going to cover this one right here. The Democrat-led House of Representatives voted 368-57 on Tuesday evening to pass a roughly $40 billion bill to deliver aid to Ukraine as it continues to face Russia's brutal assaults. Aw, damn. All 57 votes in opposition were from Republicans. The measure will need to be passed by the Senate before it can go to the President to be signed into law. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer said earlier in the day on Tuesday that after the House approved the package, the Senate will move swiftly to get the measure passed and send it to Biden's desk. Aid to Ukraine has been a rare bright spot of bipartisanship on Capitol Hill, with the Democrats and Republicans largely rallying around the call to help the nation as it faces Russian attack. Lawmakers unveiled the bill earlier in the day ahead of the House vote. The legislation the House approved provides funding for a long list of priorities, including military and humanitarian assistance. The bill includes an increase in presidential drawdown authority funding from the $5 billion the Biden administration originally requested to $11 billion. Presidential drawdown authority funding allows the administration to send military equipment and weapons from U.S. stocks. This has been one of the main ways the administration has provided Ukrainians with military equipment quickly over the past 75 days of the conflict in Ukraine. In the Ukraine aid supplemental that was signed into law in mid-March, $3 billion in this kind of funding was included. The Biden administration has been using the funds to provide military assistance to Ukraine in a series of presidential drawdown authority packages. The last package of $150 million was authorized on May 6. The bill also provides $6 billion in Ukraine Security Assistance Initiative funding. Another way the Biden administration has been providing Ukraine with military assistance. USAI funding allows the administration to buy weapons from contractors and then provide those weapons to Ukraine. So this method does not draw directly from U.S. stocks. According to the fact sheet from House Democrats, the funding will be used to assist Ukrainian military and national security forces and will go towards weapons, equipment, training, logistics, and intelligence support, as well as other needs. There will also be roughly $9 billion to help restock U.S. equipment that has been sent to Ukraine. That comes as many lawmakers have raised concerns about replacing U.S. stocks of weapons the U.S. has given to Ukraine, especially Stinger and Javelin missiles. To address humanitarian needs, the bill will include $900 million to boost refugee assistance, including housing, trauma support, and English language instruction for Ukrainians fleeing the country. The measure provides an additional $54 million that will be used for public health and medical support for Ukrainian refugees. The package, which builds on robust support already secured by Congress, will be pivotal in helping Ukraine defend not only the nation, but democracy for the world. Bullshit, but we'll keep going. Speaker Nancy Pelosi said in a letter to House Democrats on Tuesday after the bill text was released. The House vote comes after Biden called on Congress to immediately pass a new Ukrainian aid bill, as he warned that existing aid would run out soon. And I quote, "Get it to my desk in the next few days," Biden said in a statement on Monday. Biden had previously urged Congress to pass additional pandemic relief funding and the new assistance to Ukraine in the same bill. But he said on Monday that congressional leaders told him to decouple the efforts in order to more quickly get the aid to Ukraine. Congressional Republicans had insisted on the two issues moving on separate legislative tracks. Biden initially requested $33 billion to help Ukraine as it fights Russia, but the Congress had proposed billions more for food aid and military equipment. And I quote, "We cannot afford to delay in this pivotal war effort," Biden said in the statement. "Hence, I am prepared to accept that those two measures move separately so that the Ukraine aid bill can get to my desk right away." Okay. We'll have our next bit of news after this short break. Hi everyone, you're back on with Listen to El Boogie. Our next bit of news is going to be: Black women face greater risk of eviction than any other group. It's really terrible about what's going on in this country, you know, with evictions. Okay. This story is about women in King County, Washington, was found to have the highest eviction filing rate against Black women. It's Washington State, King County. As the pandemic protections for tenants are lifted, Black women are expected to suffer the most from a potential overflow of evictions, found a USA Today investigation. The investigation closely examined King County, Washington, which has the highest eviction filing rate for Black women than any other group. What's going on here? Per USA Today and data from the University of California, Berkeley, Black women are more likely than any other group to face eviction. Evictions against Black women get filed at twice the rate of white women nationally. In King County, Black women are filed against at five times the rate of white renters, with sometimes less than $10 in back rent, per USA Today. What the hell? Experts anticipate Black women renters will continue to suffer from this issue given the lift of pandemic protections for tenants. All right? More on the investigation from USA Today. In King County, Black women account for 16% of evictions while making up only 5% of the renter population. Eviction proceedings are mostly formalities, even if a tenant owes rent and can come up with the money. Hearings often last minutes and tenants are rarely given relief. It takes 3 weeks on average to get evicted in Washington State. Among the top evictions in King County were corporate landlords who had received subsidies and tax breaks for affordable housing. Many tenants who receive eviction notices end up abandoning their homes, without challenging the eviction, often because they don't know how to do so. When they don't respond or show up for court, there leads to what is called a default judgment in favor of the landlord, meaning tenants have days to vacate the property. Of the King County filings reviewed by USA Today, 44% result in a default judgment. USA Today also found other factors that put Black women at risk of eviction. They are more likely to be listed as single-parent households, have a higher probability of receiving nuisance citations from police, and are at the bottom of the socioeconomic ladder. Upon eviction, they are not only at risk of being homeless, but also experiencing a multitude of health issues that disproportionately affect them upon losing shelter, per USA Today. It's always been the case that evictions turn families' lives upside down and make it even harder for families to find safe, stable homes in the future. These devastating effects fall disproportionately on Black and brown women. They always have to include brown, but for the sake of this article, it's just Black women. Said Senator Sherrod Brown, of course, it has to be a politician with the Black and brown, but we'll continue. Said Sherrod Brown, chairman of U.S. Senate Committee on Banking, Housing, and Urban Affairs via USA Today. Okay. All right. This is going on while the president and both houses, Congress and Senate, are getting ready to send another $40 billion to Ukraine, which I covered in my first bit of news. While at the same time, Black women are more likely to be evicted, you have the Democrat Party trying to galvanize Black females to turn out and vote for them in November. So on the one hand, they throw out these symbolic gestures like putting a first black female Supreme Court justice on the high court. Then on the other hand, they're being kicked out at a higher rate than anyone in the nation. So it's crazy. Not only this situation, but America as a whole is suffering from inflation, evictions, and all other kind of things that's affecting the U.S. economy in a negative way, but they have the money to send to Ukraine in the tune of billions of dollars at one time. And Ukraine is not even a member of NATO. Not even a member. Well, we're going to cover another bit of news once I return from this short break. Boy, we're going to have to deal with them in November. In November, we're going to deal with the Democrats. See you guys in a minute. Peace. All right, when you're back on, listen to El Boogie. We're going to cover another piece of news that is having a adverse and negative effect on Americans, and that is inflation. U.S. inflation hits a new 40-year high, jumping 7.9% over past year. All right. And this is from Washington Associated Press, but via National Public Radio. Propelled by surging costs for gas, food, and housing, consumer inflation jumped 7.9% over the past year, the sharpest spike since 1982, and likely only a hard banger of even higher price to come. right? The increase reported Thursday by the Labor Department reflected a 12-month ending in February and didn't include most of the oil and gas price increases that followed Russia's invasion of Ukraine on February 24th. Since then, average gas prices nationally have jumped about 62 cents a gallon to $404.32 a gallon, according to AAA. Let me go over this real quick. The United States was only getting 2% of their oil from Russia. So they're using the war between Ukraine and Russia as an excuse for high gas prices. But at the same time, oil companies are having record profits. So which is it? The United States only received 2% of their oil from Russia. The European nations are more dependent on Russian oil. So how is it that our gas prices are going up 62 cents a gallon when we're not at war, quote unquote, with Russia? So it's ludicrous to me. But we're going to keep going. Even before the war accelerated prices increase, robust consumer spending, solid pay raises, and persistent supply shortages had sent U.S. consumer inflation to its highest level in four decades. What's more, housing costs make up about a third of the government's consumer price index, have risen sharply, a trend that's unlikely to reverse anytime soon. Which is true. The government's report Thursday also showed that inflation rose 0.8% from January to February, up from the 0.6% increase from December to January. Mm-hmm. For most Americans, inflation is running ahead of the pay raises that many have received in the past year, making it harder for them to afford necessities like food, gas, and rent. As a consequence, inflation has become the top political threat to President Joe Biden and congressional Democrats as the midterm elections draw closer. Small business people say in a survey that it's their primary economic concern too. All right. Seeking to stem the inflation surge, the Fed is set to raise interest rates several times this year, beginning with a modest hike next week. Well, as of recent, they raised interest rates a whole half a percent. I think the first was 0.25% to catch up. The Fed faces a delicate challenge, though. If it tightens credit too aggressively this year, it risks undercutting the economy and possibly triggering a recession. So it's like they damn if they do and they damn if they don't. So what's going on? They're practicing what you would call in economics contractionary fiscal policy, meaning that they're raising interest rates to reduce the money supply. They want to cut the money supply to slow down spending. So more money you have the more money you have, more the larger the money supply you have circulating through the economy, the higher prices are, because that's inflation, meaning that the prices are, the demand for goods and services are high, so you have high prices. You know, just simple supply and demand. Okay. But at the same time, if they continue to practice contractionary fiscal policy, is going to slow spending to the point where the economy could go into a recession. Okay. Energy prices, which soared after Russia's invasion to Ukraine, jumped again this week after Biden said the United States would borrow oil from Russia. Let's stop here. We were only getting 2% of our oil from Russia. Now, when this president took office, he cut off a pipeline of oil where we was, you know, we were getting a good supply of our oil in the United States, but he stopped the pipeline that was open, that was, you know, that was supplying the U.S. oil. And then after that, gas prices sharply rose then when he took office, because that was one of the first dumb things that he did. Okay, we'll continue. Oil prices did retreat Wednesday on reports that the United Arab Emirates would urge fellow OPEC members to boost production. U.S. oil was down 12% to $108.70 per barrel, though still up sharply from about $90 before the Russian invasion. Yet energy markets have been so volatile that it's impossible to know if the decline will stick. If Europe were to join the U.S. and the United Kingdom and bar Russian oil imports, analysts estimate that prices could soar as high as $160 a barrel. The economic consequences of Russia's war against Ukraine have upended a broad assumption among many economists and at the Fed that inflation will begin to ease this spring, because prices rose so much in March and April of 2021 that comparisons to a year ago would show declines. Okay, it will show declines, but it's not showing declines at the pump. Should gas prices remain near their current levels, Eric Woodgrade, senior economist at Asset Manager Alliance Bernstein, estimates that inflation could reach as high as 9% in March and April. The cost of wheat, corn, cooking oil, and such metals as aluminum and nickel have also soared since the invasion. Ukraine and Russia are leading exports of those commodities. Even before the Russian invasion, inflation was not only rising sharply, but also bordering in addition sectors of the economy. Many prices have jumped over the past year because heavy demand has run into short supplies of items like autos, building materials, and household goods. So in other words, you know, during the pandemic, the issue started with, supply chain issues, where you have goods that's coming to the country, but they're piled up at the entry point, and they're, you know, it's like supply chain has to catch up. That's crazy. Okay, continuing on, but even for some services unaffected by the pandemic, like rent costs are also surging at their fastest pace in decades. Steady job growth and high home prices are encouraging more people to move into apartments, elevating rent costs by the most in two decades. Apartment vacancy rates have reached their lowest since 1984. In the final 3 months of last year, wages and salaries jumped 4.5%, the sharpest such increase in at least 20 years. Those pay raises have, in turn, led many companies to raise prices to offset their high labor costs. What it is, the market is squeezed for labor. So there are more jobs than there are people to fill those jobs. So companies are raising prices to attract workers to re-enter the workforce, but then they're passing those costs on to consumers. Soaring energy prices pose a particularly difficult challenge to the Fed. High gas prices tend to both accelerate inflation and weaken economic growth. That's because as their paychecks are eroded at the gas pump, consumers typically spend less in other ways. So basically, to keep gas in a tank, you know, they may, you know, not buy that extra piece of cake, or they may hold off on something they need done in around the house, you know, to have extra money to put in the gas tank because gas prices are high as hell. Okay. That pattern is akin to stagflation dynamic that made the economy of the 1970s miserable for many Americans. Most economists, though, say they think the U.S. economy is growing strongly enough that another recession is unlikely, even with higher inflation. Wishful thinking, but who knows? All I'm gonna say is this: the American economy is suffering, but it's just, I don't think right now the government is working for people. And in my next story, I'm gonna cover the influx of Ukrainians into the country, where they're being given money to resettle in the United States, as the Afghans were. So they're receiving resources, money, and public assistance, when you still have Americans being at risk of being evicted. It's like it's crazy. So we're going to cover that story as soon as we return from the short break. See y'all in a minute. Peace. Hi everyone, you're back on with Listen to L Boogie. We're going to cover our final bit of news. Biden administration fast-tracking Ukrainian refugees into U.S. President Biden has promised to allow up to 100,000 Ukrainians into the country. Biden administration on Thursday announced it's moving a fast-track Ukrainian refugees, moving to fast-track Ukrainian refugees coming to the United States. President Joe Biden heralded the plan as fast and streamlined to protect Ukrainians fleeing Russian war, but it will do so on a temporary basis and require financial support from U.S. sponsor. Drawing criticism from some refugee resettlement groups who call the Ukrainians to receive more permanent refugee status. And I think that's being done because he knows it is an election year and the American people are growing weary of their tax dollars going to Ukraine. And I'm assuming that he's doing it this way as a way to let them come here in the beginning by not using United States taxpayers' money. The U.S. would accept up to 100,000 Ukrainian refugees, Biden announced in Brussels last month, amid the fast-growing refugee crisis in Europe since the end of World War II. Nearly 8 million Ukrainians have been displaced by war, the United Nations announced Thursday. Beginning April 25th, the administration says U.S.-based individuals and entities can apply to the Department of Homeland Security to sponsor Ukrainian citizens in an operation dubbed Uniting for Ukraine. See, private, you know, because the U.S. citizens are forking over the bill to help Ukraine defend themselves against Russia. Any U.S. citizen or entity can apply sponsor Ukrainians and will be required to declare their financial support and pass a background check. Administration officials said there is no limit to how many Ukrainians a person or entity can sponsor. And I quote, "We are proud to deliver on President Biden's commitment to welcome 100,000 Ukrainians and other fleeing Russian aggression to the United States. The Ukrainian people continue to suffer immense tragedy and loss as a result of Putin's unprovoked and unjustified attack on their country." Secretary of Homeland Security Alejandro Mayorkas said in a statement, "DHS will continue to provide relief to the Ukrainian people while supporting other European allies who have shouldered so much of their relief of Russia's brutal invasion of Ukraine." The administration anticipates a large majority of Ukrainians using the program will apply through family in the U.S. already, a senior administration official told reporters Thursday. But a group of nearly 70 Ukrainian-American community groups, religious organizations, refugee settlement agencies, and other nonprofits backed by a $3.6 million donation from the Wall Street bank Goldman Sachs also announced Thursday they would help U.S. citizens sponsor Ukrainian refugees. Ukrainians with a sponsor must meet certain conditions, being a resident of a war-torn country since February 11th, up to date on vaccinations, and up to date on vaccinations. They will also be subject to background checks and biometric screening and other security checks, according to the Department of Homeland Security. Once in the U.S., Ukrainians will have up to 2 years to be considered for parole. But officials said they anticipate the length of time in the U.S. to be short-term. The program will not provide a pathway to permanent residency in the U.S. Oh, that's what they say. That's what they say for now. And I quote, "What many of us have heard out in the region in Eastern Europe is a lot of Ukrainians don't even want to go further east from the border countries into Eastern Europe because it's a situation where women and children are separated from their husbands, fathers, and brothers, and so they're quite keen on staying near Ukraine to return as soon as possible," a senior administration official said. Administration officials told reporters on Thursday that they hope it will be a streamlined process, though an online portal where sponsors and Ukrainian nationals can both upload documents after being approved. Okay. They said they anticipate the process to be fairly quick, but didn't offer any exact timeline. Ukrainians who don't have a visa to enter the U.S. will be encouraged to apply for this program as they say it's the safest way to enter the U.S., officials say. In recent months, some Ukrainians seeking asylum in the U.S. have been traveling to Mexico and arriving at the Mexican border, 3,274 in March alone, according to data from DHS. But the administration announced that after April 26, when the new parole program goes live, Ukrainians who present themselves at the border port of entry will be denied entry into the U.S. like other nationalities. And this is happening because they were letting Ukrainians in, and then the Mexicans started complaining because they cut them off and allowed more Ukrainians to enter through the border. Ukrainians may be refused entry under our existing laws. Now, as I think everybody knows, we are continuing to enforce the public health authority under Title 42 at the land border to the 23rd of May. This will be the case for all nationalities, one senior administration official said. Yeah, after people started complaining, y'all letting people in who you want to let in. Title 42 Public Health Authority deployed by the Trump administration expels migrants on the basis of the COVID-19 pandemic, but Ukrainians have been largely exempted by Department of Homeland Security because of the Russian war, see? But now, with the policy set to be phased out by the administration May 23rd, there are heightened concerns of a sharp increase in migration to the southern border. For Ukrainians fleeing the violence, but who don't have sponsors in the U.S., the administration said it is working with NGO and profits to connect people. Welcome, U.S., a nonprofit created during the evacuation of Kabul to assist Afghans fleeing the Taliban, announced Thursday it is working alongside Ukrainian-American community organizations, refugee resettlement agencies, and religious leaders to support the program. With $3.6 million in funding from Goldman Sachs, the group will help U.S. citizens that want to sponsor Ukraine and allow folks to donate to support local nonprofits assisting Ukrainians or providing Airbnb or airline miles for those traveling to the U.S. But some of the refugees resettlement groups are expressing concerns about the administration plans, especially the short-term legal status these Ukrainian refugees are getting and the requirements that sponsors assume financial responsibility. So in other words, y'all gonna do this, but y'all need to get no money from the government. Doing so is the administration outsourcing its moral obligation to support newly arriving Ukrainians. And they should, because they should. Without accessing the traditional refugee resettlement benefits, we urge policymakers to consider implementing some semblance of safety net for those rebuilding their lives from scratch, said Koresh O'Mara and Vinaigrette. that's gonna be his last name. President and CEO of the Lutheran Immigration and Refugee Service. LIRS is one of the largest U.S. resettlement agencies, but is not involved in the Welcome.us program. Okay. Other refugees group expressed concern that the administration is not doing enough to address the systemic issues with the country's refugee resettlement program. As a part of Thursday's announcement, the State Department will expand resettlement operations in Europe for Ukrainian refugees, helping up to 1,800 resettle in Eastern Europe countries, including those considered the most vulnerable, like the LGBTQ community. But the resettlement program in the U.S. was dismantled by Trump era. You know, they made sure they put that in, highlighted and underlined it. But the resettlement program in the U.S. was dismantled by Trump-era budget cuts and restrictions that refugee advocates said were erroneous. Okay. While Biden had announced big targets for refugee resettlement before, including an administration ceiling of 125,000 a year. They missed a zero for the fiscal year. His administration has fallen far short of those targets. So whoever wrote this piece, they left out a zero. So it's like 125, and then you have the comma and two zeros instead of three. But cool. Halfway through this fiscal year, they have resettled 8,758 refugees, a fraction of the 125,000 goal. Okay, they put zero on this one, according to the State Department. Relying on temporary parole amounts to putting Band-Aids on an open wound. The administration cannot continue to lurk from one crisis to, or I should be leap from one crisis to another without increasing overall capacity for permanent protection in the United States, said Sunil Vakhiz, policy director at the International Refugee Assistance Project, a legal advocacy group. So, there's a time limit attached to them. They want to bring them over here under the auspices that they're only going to be here temporarily. That, you know, and then maybe some of them might want to go home to their tore up country. But at any rate, while they're here, they're going to receive resources, money, and assistance that could be going to Americans that are in danger of being evicted and homeless. With that being said, this is the end of this episode of Listen to El Bookie for Wednesday, May the 11th. And guess what? We out. And like I always say, y'all be good to each other. I know it's hard. And I'll talk to you guys again once God leaves his footprints in the sky once more. I holla. Peace.